Hey folks, this is No Red Tape. I'm Mark, and today we're going to have a conversation with a great, great friend of mine. He's an actor, he's a writer, entertainer. He's really just conquering the world one project at a time, let me tell you. And now he's branching out into music. And in this conversation, we go in depth about him finding his way into comedy and acting, what his influences have been, and finally him opening up about this new music single he's about to drop. So most recently, you'd catch him as Richie in the comedy drama The King of Staten Island, starring Pete Davidson, and which was directed by Judd Apatow. That came out earlier this year. And currently, he's a writer on Jimmy Kimmel. So, without further ado, here's my conversation with the fantastic and bold Lou Wilson. Welcome back to No Red Tape. This is Mark Laird, your host as always. I'm with my good buddy, Lou Wilson. How you doing, Lou?
Doing well, Mark. How are you?
Great. I'm glad we finally got that short figured out. Finally. Oh my gosh. Man.
But here's the thing. I could listen to that intro music all day. I love that.
Thanks, really, man. I was going for those chill groovy vibes. Man. No, thanks, man.
Groovy.
I love it.
Tone. Amen.
So, dude, I haven't seen you in a while. What have you been up to, man? Has COVID been treating you? I guess
it's been a wild one.
Yeah?
For sure. It's definitely been like a long journey from, like, you know, I think those opening days of like fear and just kind of like questioning and every day kind of wondering what this is and what is this going to be, to like, you know, kind of putting a hand on it and like deciding what this is going to be, at least for me personally, what I can make of this moment. But, you know, I'm happy to say that I'm like doing well now. It's like my family's healthy and that's all I can ask for.
Amazing, man.
How about you? You doing good? Keeping up?
Dude, I'm keeping up. You know, everybody's kind of in the same boat. We're all just trying to get through it, grind out the best way we can, see each other on the other side. And hopefully nobody we love and are close to gets sick or kind of gets, hit with this thing, this wild thing.
Yeah.
I guess in the meantime, dude, you've been staying creative. You've been doing some stuff, up to some stuff, man.
trying to.
Yeah. Putting the team on your back, man, for us all.
Hey, it's been a journey. It was like, you know, I just had, when you got this much time to think,
right?
Something's gonna come of it.
All right. Well, for everybody listening that doesn't know, Lou is an amazing entertainer, actor, comedian, just everything rolled into one. You can be successful at in the entertainment world. This guy is trying it all and definitely striking the pitch.
Okay.
Anyway, why don't you tell everybody a bit about your background, Lou, like go in depth of, you know, how kind of you came to have this passion and this love for entertainment in general, and just kind of, you know, take us back a couple chapters.
Okay, you want me to weave you a tale, Mark?
Dude, you spin me a yarn.
Spin you a damn yarn.
love it.
But yeah, you know, I grew up in LA, and I grew up like I always enjoy. I think I had like people when I was growing up described me as obnoxious. Mm. And I think that it was because I had that energy in me that was like, I want to be in people's faces.
Yeah.
You know, not in like a.
Did you feel like you had to be the center of attention? Sorry to interrupt.
No, of course. Yeah, kind of like that. I think it was that kind of energy of like, I wanted people to be paying attention to me.
Yeah.
But I hadn't curated it and like, shaped it and molded it into like the skills that I now have. So at that time it was just me doing dumb shit trying to get people to look at me.
What's the craziest shit you did when you were a kid?
I mean, I did a bunch of dumb shit. I once licked a bus pole for 64 cents in high school. I Dude. once I got me and my friend, our mutual friend Jeremy, pulled over because I was whipping quarters out of our leaning out of a car window, just whipping quarters at a friend's car near the convention center.
What do you mean by whipping quarter corners or quarters?
Like just chucking.
Oh, no way. Okay. All right. Yeah.
Like tossing loose change in a friend's car.
Got it.
And leaning out the window while doing so. And if you can believe it, a police officer decided that that was a problem. And so it was like dumb shit like that. And yeah. It wasn't until high school that I found like improv and comedy and these things that I was like, okay, cool. I can now create a space where I am that, like where I become that thing, mm-hmm. where I like get to be that person that's like me, like I want eyes on me. And I think it was like healthy for me because it was like, great, there I act like that and I do those things. And then I go back to my normal life and I get to ask, I like it to be a more fucking grounded whole human being.
Yeah. Do you remember can you picture in your head do you have a specific moment that kind of came over you that you realized like, holy crap, this is it. This is a fun thing that I want to kind of keep. I don't know if you knew you wanted to pursue it yet, but something you kind of wanted to hone in on.
I remember I honestly think that the things that drove me to it initially were more social. Like, I think all of this kind of like headspace understanding is very like, is more like college, post-collegiate.
Oh, 100%,
realizations, yeah. Of like, oh, this is why I felt that way. I think like in the beginning, it was, I loved the friends I made doing it. And I loved that I loved doing it with them. It was like the community aspect of it that I think I fell in love with first. And then it wasn't until I started doing like theatrical stuff of like the plays at the school. That was the first time I think I started getting, because when I did like the comedy sports and the improv stuff, it was always this kind of like vibe of like it was like, it felt like our little crew, and it felt like the people who liked it were our friends, and they would be like, Lou, you're so funny. And I would be like, thanks guys. Like you do this, I do. It's kind of like, what's a good example? It's like people who do a very specific thing telling each other that they like it. But most of the world and society is like, kind of like, what is this? What are you talking about? What is improv?
Yeah.
It wasn't until I started doing plays and kind of getting the like feedback from that of like, I would like go into my Algebra 2 classroom and Mr. Pascal would be like, did everyone see the play? Lou was fantastic. And I was
calling you out.
And that was kind of this weird, like, oh, okay. I like, this is that kind of feeling is something I was like, yeah, exactly. That's where performance and I connect. It was in that kind of, when that feedback loop started kind of resonating of like, oh, when I do, like the way people receive me in this space is very potent and something that I want more of.
Yeah. So you kind of fell in love with the positive feedback of people kind of started to notice you and kind of being drawn to you because you had this certain skill, a certain passion that you were exhibiting, right?
Exactly.
Killer. And then you
so, but
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. Hey man, this is no red tape.
That's right.
You got questions.
That's right.
You ask them.
Well, dude, I'm gonna plug you a little bit and talk to you as much as I can. Yeah. So for people that don't know, as far as improv goes, explain to them kind of what improv is and kind of how you found your way. You mentioned you started with improv and then found your way to kind of theater, and then you obviously have blossomed from there. But kind of what is the nature of improv for people that have never seen it?
Yeah, so improv is entirely improvised, made up on the spot.
Yeah, ad-libbing, if you will.
Scenes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Whatever your preferred word for there's nothing and then we made something up. Yes, it's much like a play. It's like a scene, but there it's not scripted at all. We take a suggestion or a word or an idea or some kind of prompt from the audience and then create something entirely original and new in the space that we're in, based on that and using that information. It's much like the show, whose line is it anyway?
Yeah, exactly. I was going to bring that up. Yeah.
Yes. The classic. And kind of, I started in short form, which is like Whose Line, which is like games, like systems, a lot going on of maybe somebody with a whistle, kind of instructing the action of what's happening. But would later, and for most of my career, have been doing performing long form improv, which is more formless, more scenic, more play-like, and like that we are doing these like extended scenes.
Yeah. More character based,
playing a game. Exactly.
Yeah. 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 So you went from improv, you started doing these plays, man, you're getting this positive feedback. Everybody's starting to notice you. Everybody's like, who's Lou? What's this guy?
Exactly. And then all of my teachers are like, who's Lou?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Cause all these people that doubt you, they just have no idea who that guy is in the back of the class.
Exactly.
But anyway, so you went from that, and then I guess when was the point in your life, you know, that you were like, holy shit, I need to take this to the next level. I need to kind of pursue this as a career, or at least try. Because you growing up in LA, I'm sure you're aware that so many people fail and so many people try it and they don't, you know, stay true to it and kind of fall off the deep end. So what kind of made you, I guess, have that initiative? Where'd that positivity and that passion come from, Lou? Come on, man.
Where'd it come from, Mark?
Yeah, well,
let me tell you. It's sophomore year of college.
Okay.
It's literally like, it's like December.
Oh shit, we're getting specific. Okay.
Well, I know. Well, it's like a very specific moment.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Yeah.
Because it's like sophomore year of college, because I went to college with the idea that like, this is, you can't do this.
Yeah.
Like, I think like you said, of like, I know the odds on this one and they're insane. So we're not, I'm not going to go to that table. We'll fucking play one of the other games. We'll go play blackjack. I'm not going to go fucking waste money at roulette. So I went to college with the idea of like, I was going to major in communications, get my degree, go into public relations.
So that was the kind of the backup plan.
Exactly.
Or the forward plan at first, but then became a backup plan. Yeah,
exactly. I'm going to go be creative in a corporate environment. Mm-hmm. I'm going to find the job that has the most creativity, but also stability. And that's going to be my life. And, but I was doing improv and I was really loving it and I was doing well, especially like my sophomore year of college. It was like this, like, it's kind of like, what I've heard about like poker players of like, new poker players do really well because they're not thinking about it.
They're like more impulsive.
Exactly. They're not as like thought methodical yet. Mm. So they kind of freak other poker players out because they're just like, what? I don't know yet. And I feel like I kind of had that like, I don't know, I think sophomore year, I was like, unreal. I was doing very well at improv because it was so, I was really just giving my all to it. And I think it was also this space where I was like, this is where I'm myself. I remember after the first semester, things were going great. I went home. I watched the seasons of 30 Rock that were out.
Oh yeah.
And I watched the seasons of Community that were out. And I remember watching these shows and being like, this has to be the most fun in the world. There's like no way this isn't the most fun. Yeah. Making television, comedic television with your friends, laughing every day, like creating something so so joyful. I was like, there's no way this isn't the best job in the world. And I, based on what I have, based on the fact that I'm from Los Angeles, based on the fact that so much of it happens here, we got to at least take a shot. Like, worst case scenario, we go to law school in 5 years. Like, let's do it. But that, of course, it wasn't enough for me. So I called my good friend, Jeremy Colhane, and I said, hey, Jeremy, will you do this with me? Mm. Will you move out to LA? We'll live in our parents' houses. We'll try and make it work. If it doesn't work in 5 years, we'll figure something else out. Mm. And he was like, yeah, let's do it. And so from that point, I went back to Boston. I hit up the theater department. I asked if I could minor in theater. I started like putting the pieces together. I started researching where I could perform outside of the school in Boston, like proper, so I could start like performing at a real theater.
Right.
And I found one. Found like a nonprofit theater in Cambridge that had like general auditions for people. So I auditioned there and like went to work on like preparing myself to make this my life when I graduated. And a lot of this, you know, the improv theater thing worked out by like the beginning of my senior year. I was performing there regularly. I was performing there regularly. I ended up not minoring in theater because I wanted to go to Italy more than I wanted to minor in theater.
I don't think anybody's going to fault you for that one. Yeah.
I mean, it was weird. I only took one acting class and I never did a play in college. People asked me to do
this, really?
But I had pretty high anxiety that I wasn't aware of at the time. So like auditioning was like a insane thing for me. So I remember
I looked at the sides for
one of the plays and I was like, I can't do this. No, absolutely not.
Right.
So I just stuck to improv, but I don't know. That's where I just started building a foundation. And that thing about poker players that I said was because my like junior year and my senior year, I think I stopped being free. I stopped being as free with my art because it started being like, okay, now it needs to be good. And it started like getting in my, I started like getting in my own head. I think theoretically I was better. And I bet I was funnier, but it didn't feel as good because I was now approaching it from this very methodical place of like, we need to be consistent and we need to be finding a rhythm and we need to be showing growth.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the beginning. Sophomore year of college, that winter break, once Jeremy Colhane confirms that we're in, that's the beginning of the climb.
Wow. So you mentioned you had this like growing period where you kind of took it seriously and started to kind of think technically about what you were doing a little bit. I've had some of those periods as well for me. And for me, it's just so frustrating at times because like you say, you kind of like lose this ability to be free as much with your art. You kind of are like, oh, shit. Like that wasn't that good because of this reason. And then you get in your head. And oftentimes for me, it's like you hit like a hump or a hill where it was like, oh man, I feel like I'm just getting worse instead of getting better. 100%. For sure. Yeah.
And it really fucks with your head because you get into this place where you're like, I can't, what am I thinking?
Yes.
There's no way I can do this because now that I'm taking it seriously, now that I'm paying attention, I'm seeing my inconsistencies and those are going to kill me if I can't overcome them. And I don't know, so much of art is about so much of like making art and doing art is about embracing those inconsistencies and those flaws and not erasing them, but rather figuring out how you either get around them or use them. That was kind of, I feel like for me, I don't know. I think I went through a period of being like, I can't make my mistakes go away. And that's why I shouldn't do this. And I would like to believe that I'm now in more of a place where it's not about making my mistakes go away, but it's about living with my mistakes and thriving with my mistakes, understanding that like inconsistency is a part of art. And that's just, it's never perfect. We're not like figuring out the code for a computer. We're trying to find a way to evoke emotion in others. And that's just, you can't. There's no perfect line of code for that. That's every time going to hit that.
Exactly. And you definitely can, you can get in your head about how you feel you're doing versus what the audience or the person receiving whatever you're giving is feeling. Because sometimes you don't feel it, but they may be feeling it. And you're just like, wow.
Exactly.
It really, it can mess with you if you let it, for sure.
Yeah,
100%. So you mentioned earlier, and I'm sure every artist kind of has a little bit of social anxiety or a little bit of anxiety as far as when it comes to auditions or when the pressure's on. Like, how did that develop for you? I mean, I didn't... You know, when you you meet the great Lou Wilson, you don't realize that he would ever be capable of such, you know, just mere mortal emotions like that. But how did that come about? And like, how have you kind of like fought that off?
So you mean like with regard to like specifically auditioning anxiety in general?
Yeah, just anxiety in general. I think so many people, especially right now in COVID, you know, being without a lot of social interaction, stuff like that, maybe developing some sort of that. But I think across the board, just society in general has become very much aware of just social anxiety. So, just kind of speaking to that.
I mean, I don't know. I think it all comes from like, I have like massive like body issues. Like I grew up being like morbidly obese. I was like, I weighed like 350 pounds when I was like a sophomore in college. And, you know, I think I grew up with all these like insane, not insane, but like, if anything, very well curated by our society, expectations and thoughts of myself as being like wrong or broke or like, yeah, of being wrong, that like to be in my form was wrong. Mm. And so I like, yeah, I just have these like crazy ideas about, I had all these crazy ideas of like what people think of me when I walk into a room, what people think of me when I do this, or like I used to not be able to like, I used to feel like really weird about walking into like a store, like a Crombie and Fitch or like a Hollister.
Yeah.
Because I was like, all the people in here who work here are going to look at me. And
right.
He doesn't belong here.
Almost thinking, were you thinking of yourself kind of like a third person almost, like seeing yourself through? Yeah, exactly. Okay.
I was constantly picturing the ideas of others, like what thoughts people were putting on me. And, you know, I think that like very much just carried over into my creative work of like, people think that I think that this is funny. And what does that say about me? And what are they going to say about me because of that? Mm. But I don't know. I think like, it took me like senior year of college, I discovered therapy, and that's like where I kind of got this label of anxiety. And then it's like, once I had that, it just became about understanding that, grounding, like, you know, understanding that, knowing that, and, you know, as much as I can, reminding myself when I have the space and bandwidth to that, like that feeling, those thoughts are coming from that place. And it's definitely not been easy. I think in creative spaces, I think it's been much harder in my social and like in my social life and like my personal life. But I think in my creative life, I do a good job of surrounding myself with people whose opinions I trust and who are grounded and when those feelings begin to arise in me, who I can reach out to and be like, hey, where am I at? And they'll be like, a normal place. And I'll be like, great. And I'll hold on to that for dear life and keep pushing forward.
Definitely. Definitely. That's good stuff, man. So how do you think you master it when it comes to auditioning? Because so many probably young performers out there are kind of going through a lot of anxiety when it comes to auditioning or having, you know, when you get that call back or something like that, when you're trying to attain a role, how do you get out of your own way?
I had a friend, because, you know, like many actors, when I started the game, it was all self-tapes. And I guess maybe there was a time before filming yourself at home wasn't so easy that like self-tapes probably weren't as popular. But, you know, I think like I started this game like in the beginning of like when – I don't know when the self-tape era started, but self-tapes were huge when I was in it. And so for me, I had a friend who I used to make all my self-tapes with who's doing this very like – profound thing to me, which is just like, you know, man, you're always just trying to give them a vibe. That's it, right? There's no world in which the reason you don't get a call back is because you didn't land that line right, is because you didn't look exactly where your eye line wasn't exactly where it was supposed to be. All of those like minutia things that you watch, that you see, that you go, this is bad because I blanked. That's not it for them. Like, you just are selling a vibe. You're selling the idea of how you would do this. And the director is going to mold and shape you into the performance they want, but you're showing them where you're starting from. And so I think, like, him telling me that is something I very much, like, embraced, of being like, it's never going to be about one or two things that I did wrong in the audition. And so from that point on, carrying that, I was always like, okay, go in there, work it until you feel like you're doing it the way you want to. Mm. And as long as you give them some shade of that, of those choices that you've made, like the idea that this thing or this little thing wasn't right, that's never going to be, that's always going to be like, oh, okay, I wasn't the guy, period.
Dude, like, love
they
that.
Were considering me, but I wasn't the guy, period. And mm-hmm. So it's like, when I, you know, the only times I really feel it are those moments when somebody will be like I've had auditions where they're like, hey, we're going to run this 8 or 9 times and I'm going to try and like tweak these little things. Cause those are the ones where I'm like, ooh, I could have been the guy, but it was those things. But 9 times out of 10, it's just going to be like, Are you a fit or are you not a fit? And mm-hmm. it's very with what they have in their head, and that's way bigger and clearer than like, ooh, I want to look off wistfully when I say this, and I didn't look as wistful as I wanted to. It's not that. That's not the difference. And so once I embraced that, I think it became a lot easier, because stuff that I didn't get, it wasn't like, oh, that's on me, I didn't do it right. It was like, nope, wasn't even close. If I did it one time and they asked me to leave, me running it for 3 more hours, getting a coach, really nailing it, I don't think I was ever going to be the guy.
Yeah.
My hair wasn't right. My beard's too long. I'm too big. Like, one of those things was, I think, but yeah. I also get that. I feel like I'm also blessed in that I'm a specific type. Like, I'm a large black man. So it's like, I think I'm like, oh, well, you wanted a big black dude, or you didn't want a big black dude. And then you didn't want a cheery big black dude. Like, it's like, there's the I don't know. There's less minutiae in it than I think people hold on to.
Dude, I love that. You kind of like find solace in like, okay, this is my box. If I don't, you know, please them in this box, you know, whatever, I'll get them in the next one. You know, it's very much exactly. like that.
As long as I'm clear with what my box is, mm-hmm. and I do my box, like, if I'm, it's, they're either checking it or not. It's not like, oh, 100%, I'm trying to make my box wider.
Yeah.
So,
well, whoever was that guy that told you that, man, he's spitting facts, dude. I wish I had one of those people on my side when I started. That's kick ass.
Tim was a good man.
Tim, good dude. Shout out to Tim. Love it.
Shout out to Tim.
Cool, man. Well, so you've made some headway. You know, you're climbing the ranks in the acting world, in the entertaining world. And so, you know, as we were talking about earlier, COVID's made everybody kind of get locked down, and either you kind of muster some creativity during that lockdown, you kind of create something for yourself, or you kind of wait for better days. And it seems like you've been hard at creating something, man. So,
hey, man,
we wanted to talk today about your kind of transitioning a little bit, or kind of opening up a new door, if you will, into music. So, man, let's talk about that. Let's dive in.
Yeah, man, it was like in July. I think I was just kind of, I had this like, I woke up one day and it was just like, I want to make this. I want to make this rap out, like EP, you know? It's like something, music is something I've always loved. I used to do musical improv, and it was just, you know, I wrote like a rap theme song for my elementary school when I was in eighth grade, or my middle school when I was in eighth grade. It's like, rap has always just been like a part of me. It's my favorite genre of music.
So you mentioned,
and I was like,
yeah. So you mentioned musical improv. Just for people that don't know, that's improv where it's your music is involved. You're kind of like creating characters around a certain song or music. I mean, maybe you can speak to that a little bit or not, but
yeah, of course. It's like, it's the same thing as improv, but with music, and it's like, I would like, we would like do songs on the spot. We'd like write songs. Like we have all these, there are all these like structures in that you like, it's weird. It's like, I mean, it's like improv, but on crack. Cause you actually have to learn like song structure. Cause then you're like, great, I hear music and I'm going to write a song on the spot to this music using the structures that I know that the musical accompanist knows and that I know.
I was just gonna say it's just a fun trip if you're an audience member, you know what I mean? It's just something different.
It's when it's done well, it's incredible.
Oh yeah, 100%.
And so yeah, you know, I've just been like making music, you know, all of this time, but it was like, and I don't know, with this time I was like, let's put it to paper, let's make it real. And that's when I got to work on the blueprint.
Hell yeah, man. And so for those of you that don't know, my heart sank not too long ago when with some sadness hit the blueprint a little bit. I don't know. There was something going on there where you kind of you lost kind of like the masters you were working on, or maybe you can speak to that, Lou. I don't want to take away the thunder, but you know, that was a tough time. I know I saw you'd posted a video on Instagram and I don't want to say too much. I'll let you kind of take the wind from that.
I've been working on it because I had me and my producer had a big disagreement, and so I decided that I was gonna I was gonna finish it up on my own. And I was working on it, and yeah, it was, I don't know, it was stupid. It was really fucking stupid. I was trying to take some photos for like the release, and yeah, I don't know. I guess, you know, you don't think about the worst happening until it happens. And it's like, once it happens, you're like, this is fucking stupid. Why didn't I fucking pay $9 and whatever it costs to fucking get, you know, Google Drive, or like, I should have just bought a terabyte hard drive or some shit. But like, I don't know. I just didn't, you don't think it's going to fucking happen to you.
No one can predict that type of thing, you know?
Yeah. And so, yeah, I don't know. I was doing this like photo shoot with the laptop, and I don't know. I was rushing. I was like rushing because it was, I don't know, I think I had been having like a hard time with some of the, because I was teaching myself some of the stuff like to get everything done. And I think I've been having like a hard time with that. And then I like wanted to get this shoot done because I had to like get back to work. And yeah, we were just fucking rushing. And it fell.
Yeah. So you were doing a kind of a publicity shoot, like a preliminary publicity shoot. And just an accident happened, and you know, the laptop was kind of compromised, in other words, and you know, and shit like that sometimes happens, but it doesn't matter. We're not going to dwell on that negative because, dude, you've kind of like risen like a phoenix out of that, and you're coming out with something. I know, right? Cheesy legendary metaphor there, but like came out of nowhere and like pedal to the grindstone and came out with something pretty special. At least it seems like. You might be pulling my leg, but I don't think you are. And you're coming out with something pretty, pretty epic. So, tell me about Coda. What's, dude, hit me with this, man.
Yeah.
You're like, you're holding out on me.
Well, Mark, you know, I'm gonna give you the juice. Okay.
You better, man. It's worth the squeeze. That's what I hear.
It's worth the squeeze. I don't know, man. Everyone was so fucking supportive after,
hell yeah,
like the blueprint happened, that it was just like, I don't know. I like, there were a lot of like long nights where I was just fucking in my feelings, like about the blueprint. And I would just like read those comments over and over again. And I would just like read that support and that encouragement and that, and it just, I don't know. Like, I could not cash in on that. right? Yeah. You just can't, when people show you love like that, you can't just go, you can't just shrug, thank them and move on. It's like, I had to cash in on that. I had to use that love and that energy that people were sharing with me and turn it into something special. And so that thing is Coda. And
Hell yeah.
It's kind of my ode to the blueprint and what it should have been and what it could have been and the journey I went through with it. And maybe a little glimpse of the future, you know, a little bit of where I'm headed and what's next.
Dude, great pitch. You're killing this right now.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Well,
no, you are.
I had a lot of time to think about it.
Dude, I love it. I love it. I mean, you talk about summoning all those positive vibes and turning it into something pretty special. I can't wait to take a listen, man.
I think it's going to be great, man. You know, it's like, you know, I'd like to believe the creative energy of the blueprint is like still out there, right? It's like in that same way that, like, you know, nothing ever, like, you know, we're all made of stardust and shit, you know, of like, you know, the universe, we're all made of like, everything is everything. It's like, I want to believe that all of the energy and effort and like emotion that I put into the blueprint is still out there. It's still in the universe.
Yeah.
And it's still somewhere out there. People are vibing on that and listening to that. And so that's what I want this song to be. It's like, it's that energy is still there, that it still reverberates out there. And so that's Coda. Coda is this track that's just about the idea that the blueprint is still out there. It's still being bopped. I don't know by who. I got a couple guesses, but you know, it's just this, it's all still here. It's not gone. And yeah.
All right.
And I really am excited to share it with everyone.
Dude, I'm excited to listen. Like I said, so where can people catch this? Where can we get
it's going to be on Spotify. It's going to be on Apple Music.
Look at
iTunes,
that. Look at that
Napster.
Plug. Love this.
Yeah. We're doing this for real. All right.
This is it.
Blueprint. So we're doing it for real. It's going to be on all of the major platforms.
Dude.
And so, yeah, it's going to be a full release.
Yeah.
It's going to be wherever you're normally getting your music.
Yeah.
That's where you'll be able to get Coda.
Dude, I love it. And so, you as an actor, you know, branching into music, do you feel like that's kind of like a hard thing? Are you intimidated by kind of opening this new door or anything like that? Is there anything, or are you just like, you know, fuck it, whatever. I've got this creative idea and I want to kind of shoot it out in the world.
I think it's like, I think it was like, fuck it, you know, especially with COVID. Like, it just felt like, especially, you know, when I was working on the blueprint, it was just kind of like, you could tell me that, like, this is what else am I supposed to be doing with my time? What else am I supposed to be doing? What else am I supposed to give my energy to? If not this EP, it's like, this is where I hadn't put out music before, but like, I have this background and it just felt like, I don't know, who's stopping me?
Dude, I love that.
Except myself.
Yeah.
Well, we got to work.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess you mentioned you got this background. Who are your biggest influences? Like what do you draw from to create your beats, man?
I mean, I think like, I love like the lyrical, I grew up with a lot of like lyrical raps, you know, Tribe Called Quest, Black Star, Mos Def and Talib Kweli, like those guys, just like, you know, my dad, the first time I like used to listen to rap a lot was like Tupac. My dad had Tupac's two disc greatest hits album in the car. And I used to just play that all like on repeat.
Oh yeah.
And so, you know, those are the kind of guys that I think kind of influenced me and whose music you'll see in this. And then I'm also, you know, God get help, but you know, I'm a big Kanye West fan. And I think I took a lot of inspiration from him on making this track of just like, I don't know, kind of like that spiritual energy.
Yeah.
I think I've kind of infused into this one. So those are like the guys who I'm like, that's who I take my cues from.
Killer. Basically. Yeah. Like in the backseat growing up, my dad had a Michael Jackson CD that literally, dude, I absolutely, my ears probably like destroyed that CD just listening to it so much.
Of course, dude. Of course.
Dude, I loved it. And then like Kanye, man, like about Kanye, like I couldn't believe he ran for president this year. And I know, I think he has plans to do it again. And I just keep hearing all the crazy stuff that he's got. He's a genius, right? I think we both think he's like incredible. Like his music is unbelievable, but
he's, yeah, I mean, he desperately needs somebody to check in with him, but he's a genius. Yeah. I don't know. It's like you, I was listening to Eminem last night.
Huh.
And I don't, Eminem is like boring now. I guess
really?
I was just trying to start beef with Eminem. but I don't know. I think it's this interesting thing of like, you see the way like musicians evolve and grow, and like Eminem's subject matter has changed as he's grown older and continued to rap. But it's like an Eminem song always sounds like an Eminem song.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
A Kanye West song from when Kanye started to when Kanye, where Kanye is now, are like two wholly different things. And I think that that's like, if there's something I want for my musical career, it's something like that. It's just like, what if where I start and where I end are just two crazy different places? And I think that, you know, if I like tap into the feelings I have from experiences like this one, with like, you know, even just my first EP of like never coming out, it's like, I think I'm set up for that. I'm set up for this journey of just like where I start, where I end being two disparate places.
Yeah, totally. I love that. When artists, their music kind of captures how they are at the present moment, or their
exactly.
Yeah, exactly. What they're going through at that present time. And then you can see that evolution of their artistry as well as their evolution of, I guess, their own human being mindset. Mm-hmm. It's exactly. Pretty sick. And I think those are the most prolific artists and who garner the best fan bases anyway, too.
Exactly. So, and I think like, you know, it's like you really want to earn the title of artist. Like, that's it. It's like, I'm not just like a rapper.
Yeah, this isn't just a fad for you. This is like, no, this is an extension of me.
Yeah, this is like this is my fucking, this is a limb.
This is my shit,
fucking
man.
Limb. My God, this is my fucking, this is my third arm coming out of the back of my head. I don't know. Yeah.
All right. we'll go with that image. Love it. I love it, man. Well, dude, this has been great. Do you got any? I want you to plug your socials real quick. I want everybody to know how they find you, my man.
Of course, I'm on. I'm only on Instagram because that's the only one.
Oh man, too good for TikTok. Too good for all the other ones.
Too good for TikTok, bro. Just too good for TikTok. Yeah, I'm.
I don't know, man. With music, man, that might be where all the people are listening to those tunes, man.
And my Coda will be on TikTok, so don't worry.
All right, okay. All right. So Instagram just for now, but TikTok coming soon.
Instagram just for now, TikTok coming soon. It's just at Sweet Lou Zinho, except for no Enya. So it's Sweet Lou Z-I-N-H-O at the front. But yeah, on Instagram. And, you know, I'm...
Find him there, guys. Yeah.
Coda will be wherever you normally get your music.
It's spectacular, man. We can't wait to listen to that. So when is Coda formally hit?
Coda will be dropping on Tuesday, December 22nd at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Look at that. Love it. Love it, man. Well, dude, I can't wait to listen. I want to thank you for coming on the show. Hopefully, you'll be back soon. This was fun talking to you, man. And
Mark, so good to see you. Thank you so much for having me on. Thank you so much for letting me talk about the blueprint and all of that. This has been great. It's just been good to see you and talk to you, man.
Thanks for coming on the show, man. All right, guys, that's it. This has been No Red Tape. And until next time.